Welcome. This is Sherilyn Parsons, founder and director of the Bay Area Book Festival. Enjoy the conversation.
Welcome to Nordic Noir. My name is Randall Brandt, and I'm a librarian at the University of California, Berkeley. And it is my distinct honor to moderate today's panel. Before we get started, I would like to thank the sponsors of this program. Bear with me. There are several of them. We have the support of Iceland Naturally, the Icelandic Literature Center, the Barbro Osher Pro Suecia Foundation, the Consulate General of Sweden in San Francisco, the Swedish Women's Educational Association, San Francisco, the Norway House Foundation, and NORLA, Norwegian Literature Abroad. You have them to thank for this panel today. immediately after the panel, there will be book signing with the authors. It will be in the courtyard just through the doors to your left. And if you have not done so already, please silence your phones and other devices. Okay, so as I was preparing for this panel, a couple of weeks ago, I ran across an article that was published by the Associated Press, and it was about the 2019 World Happiness Report. And it began like this. Finland has topped an index of the happiest nations for the second consecutive year. The World Happiness Report, produced by the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network, ranks 156 countries by how happy their citizens see themselves to be. It's based on factors including economic wealth, life expectancy, social support, freedom to make life choices, and levels of government corruption. The index showed that other Nordic nations did well again this year as well, with Denmark, Norway, and Iceland taking the next spots. The remaining top 10 nations were the Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden, New Zealand, Canada, and Austria. The United States dropped from 18th to 19th place. So, sadly, we don't have any Finns here today. So we're not as happy as we could be. But with writers from three of the top seven happiest countries on Earth, we certainly have what must be the happiest panel at the Bay Area Book Festival. So, the happiest author on the happiest panel must be Kjell Ole Dahl, who joins us from Oslo, Norway. Kjell has been dubbed the godfather of Nordic noir and is the author of the Oslo Detective series, which began publishing in Norway in 1993, and the books have been appearing here in the States since 2008. The sixth book in the series, to appear in English, The Ice Swimmer, has been shortlisted for the 2019 Patrona Award, which honors outstanding Scandinavian crime fiction in English translation. From the fourth happiest country in the world, we have Ragnar Jonasson. Ragnar is the best-selling author of five books in the Dark Iceland series about Detective Ari Thor of the Siglufjordur Police. The first book in the Hidden Iceland series is The Darkness, which has also been nominated for a 2019 Patrona Award. Next, we have three sad Swedes. Jenny Rognevi is the author of the Leona Lindberg series. Two novels have been published in English so far, the most recent of which is called Any Means Necessary. And before becoming a writer, Jenny was a pop star who was a member of the Swedish girl group Cosmo 4. Following her music career, she studied criminology, sociology, law, and psychology at Stockholm University and worked for over 7 years as a criminal investigator in the Stockholm City Police Department. Quite a career change. She's made a third career change, and she is now a full-time writer. Stefan Anhem comes from Stockholm. He has over 20 years of experience as a successful screenwriter for both TV and films. He's written screen adaptations for both Henning Mankell's Kurt Wallander series and for Helene Thurston's Detective Inspector Irene Huss series. As a novelist, he writes the Fabian Risk series, of novels, which have won numerous awards and regularly appear atop the bestseller lists around the world. The third book to appear in the States is called 18 Below. And finally, Jonas Bonnier. Jonas is a screenwriter as well as a journalist and a novelist. From 2008 to 2014, he was CEO and president of the Bonnier Group, one of the oldest media companies in Sweden. He's the author of 8 novels, but the first to appear in English is called The Helicopter Heist, which was published in the UK last year, and it makes its US debut later this month. The novel has already caught the attention of Hollywood, however, and is set to be turned into a film starring Jake Gyllenhaal. So please join me in welcoming our authors today. Okay, so my first question is actually for Jonas, who I introduced last. And I want to talk to him a little bit about his...
I'm still puzzled by the index, I must say. If you haven't known any Finn, they're not happy. I mean, I never experienced a Finn that's happy, actually. I'm not sure about you guys, but this is so puzzling. I will have a hard time listening to the questions, actually, yeah, after this. But okay,
well,
shoot,
go ahead. You can't argue with the United Nations,
no,
I don't know.
No. You're right, statistics.
I actually have a colleague at the library who is here visiting from Finland, and she confirmed that she was very, very happy.
So. It must have been her answering the questions.
Maybe. Well, she's in Berkeley, too, so... Anyway, I told you this was a happy panel. We're gonna have fun. So Jonas, I wanna talk to you about The Helicopter Heist. So the book has been described as a true crime novel because while it is fiction, it's very closely based on a real heist that occurred in Sweden in 2009. And I'd just like to hear a little bit more about that, the real case, and what made you decide to turn it into a novel.
The story in itself is such a, it lends itself so perfectly for a novel. Four guys, they decide that they will hit a cash depot and steal the money. They steal a helicopter. They fly and land upon the roof of the cash depot, go into the cash depot, take all the money, and escapes with the helicopter. The police finds out about their scheme and plan months before. Then they understand that the police know about it weeks before, and they still do it and succeeds. Who can resist that, right? And I was fortunate enough to actually interview the four robbers. One of them just came out of prison a week before I met with them. And they were all, four of them, they were sort of such characters. It was very different from each other, full of strange stories. Well, I sort of fell in love with one of them. They were so strange people. So I had to write a story about them and their heist. And I think, unfortunately, it's more about them than the heist, maybe. But anyway, so yeah, I had to do it. It was unresistible.
Yeah, that's always great to hear authors who just have to write that story. Yeah. So I'll open it up for the rest of the panel. So Jonas was inspired by a real crime that took place, and I was just wondering if any of the other of you have also, you know, in your fiction, has been inspired by actual crimes that have taken place.
It's very, very, it's very hard in Iceland because we are also the most peaceful country. I think actually that list we do top. So you have to like create this stuff in your mind. At least for Iceland, I don't know.
I did some non-fiction books on true crime, but not the fiction. No, but I'm very inspired by it, by the stories and the characters, of course. Do research on it.
Yeah. Okay, so so as I was preparing for this panel, in addition to reading UN reports, I was also looking at book reviews of our panelists' books. just to see what, you know, what other people were writing about. So I looked at, you know, sites like Kirkus Reviews and Publishers Weekly and found very nice reviews. But then I found a really nice review that I liked, and it was for Jenny Rognenby's first book, Leona, The Die Is Cast. And it was on a website that was called Smart Bitches Trashy Books. That's the name of the website. I'm sorry. So I want to read just a really short excerpt from that review.
I don't know if I want to hear it.
No. She liked your book quite a lot.
Okay.
So the reviewer wrote, "When I set aside my preconceived notion of expecting to like female characters aside, I find that while I kind of hated Leona, I really fucking like this book." This is an adult website, I'm sorry. "The mystery itself, the pacing, the plot, all of those things were exquisite, and I was torn between wanting Leona to fail and come to terms with justice and wanting her to succeed because I wanted to see how the hell she would manage it." So, Jenny, you have written a lead character who creates conflict in your readers. Some of your readers love her, some of your readers hate her, some of them both at the same time. She possesses a lot of very bad qualities for a series hero. And yet, a lot of times readers do end up liking her and rooting for her and sympathizing with her. So what made you decide to go in this type of a direction? And I would love for you to tell us more about Leona.
Yeah. Well, I knew that I was taking a lot of risk with creating a character like this. But I wanted to write about a female character that breaks the norms in and she does in many different ways. Leona is, she grew up, she has a quite dark past. She grew up in a family where the parents treated her really bad. She actually grew up in the basement of their house, and while her two brothers were really well treated. So, her parents actually treated her this way because they didn't think she behaved the way a little girl should behave, and so in order to survive, Leona had to. She became an expert in observing other people, how they you know react to things and how they behave, and that became something that she continued doing in her whole life. She wanted to live this perfect life with a husband and two children and a good home, so she could in some way hide her personality. And but when she's around 30, 35 years old and she lives this perfect life, she starts to question it. Is this it? Is this my life right now? And is this a life that I chose for myself? And she can't live up to all this, the expectations the society has for how a woman should behave and how a mother should be and how a police officer should be. So she decides to break free from it all, and that's when she starts to walk on this really dangerous path and starts to commit crimes. And from what I was working as a criminal investigator for the Swedish police force at that time, and I was thinking while I was walking around at the police station, I was thinking, what if a person that like me working with investigations would have like this a big secret that you can't tell your colleagues, you can't tell anyone about it, and what if a policeman or police woman would cross the line for what a police should do. So to me, that was where it started for me to describe this kind of person. And we all know, we've seen it in literature and in film, male policemen cross the line many times. Even in reality, we have some very serious cases in Sweden where policemen have committed very serious crimes. But what happens when it's a woman doing it? So that's what I was starting to think about and wanted to write about.
Yeah, that review that I was reading, that the before this part, the reviewer was talking about that, how she's read a lot of books where men do terrible things, and she didn't really think it was, you know, that remarkable. But then when she read Leona, he was like, well, why am I feeling differently about this? Yeah. And, you know, so she started setting aside these preconceived ideas.
Yeah, it seems like she really understood the book. I'm really happy about that.
No, she liked it. Well, and in the second book, Leona has a very interesting idea of how she's going to impart her knowledge with a series of seminars, basically. So, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can tell you about that. It's, well, Leona, she discovers some different... I mean, she wants to change her life. And in order to do that, she needs money. And to get money, she uses her knowledge as a detective to get money. And I'm trying not to, you know, give away too much, but well, let's just say that she in this second book, she takes money from people to teach them how to commit crimes without getting busted.
Stefan,
I just have to say one thing. Your character can do all that stuff. And my character, a man, I had one scene where he is coming home. It's in the first book. And he's been away at the hospital for 2 days. And his son is home alone. And we know that the son is not there. Maybe the killer has taken the son. We don't know yet. But he's coming home and he's texting. I'm home now. He hears the music from the son's room, hard rock music, and he said, "Yeah, home. You want to go out and eat?" And the son texts back, "Yeah, that would be nice. We can do that. Where should we go?" And we know it's the killer who is answering. And the reaction I got: "What a father! How can he text? Why doesn't he go up? You know, he's in the same house. He go up a bit later, you know, he finds out, you know, 10 minutes later. But I got so much mail from this. And I'm like, you know, I'm always texting my own kids. Dinner is come out, let's eat, you know. Since text was free, you know, doesn't cost more. That's a really nice way. And I'm like, oh, I'm really bad
You're
father.
A bad father.
You know, he's not taking drugs, you know. He don't go to prostitutes. He doesn't drink too much. He's texting his kids.
Well, if you're looking for sympathy, it doesn't work. No.
Doesn't work.
No,
a little.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
That's very interesting.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Stefan, because I was just going to ask you to follow up with telling us a little bit more about your main character, Fabian Risk, who seems like a pretty normal guy on the surface. That he's a detective, tell us a little bit. Yeah, except he's obviously a terrible father.
Emotionally,
I'd like to just hear you tell us a little bit more about you know, what motivated you to write this character.
Basically, I've been working a lot with the Kurt Wallander character, as you said in the beginning here, and I was a bit tired of having old grumpy men, you know, who listen to old opera music and don't have any friends more, no women, they can't stand them, you know, alone, drinking whiskey, and, you know, bitter. And, you know, maybe it's Kurt Wallander who took down Sweden from place first because he's not that happy. I don't know. And I wanted to have, you know, a character, a man who is younger, in the middle of his life, and, you know, still believes in the good things. And, of course, with all the problems you have in your normal life. So... And with a decent music taste also.
Yeah. I need to say. He likes Nirvana and the Pixies.
Yeah.
Those are the two.
He has really good music taste. I thought, well, I didn't want him to go to prostitutes and do all that, that a lot of police officers do, or murder investigators in crime fiction.
You're looking at me?
I'm looking at you. You know, I said to myself, I want to have a normal main character. And a review I read said, this character is unnormal, normal to be a murder investigator. And that made me quite happy, actually. And so I'm trying to have, like, all my characters, except the killer, to be normal, as everyone here is, you know, with all our faults, texting faults, or whatever it is, you know. And then I wanted this the killer to be, you know, a level higher, a bit above, extra life, you know. Like, could he do that for real? Like, it's a perfect storm for these normal people to solve. That was my basic idea with the characters.
So, Shell, you've been writing your Oslo Detective series for a long time with a differing cast of characters.
Grumpy old man.
So, tell us a little bit more about your detectives.
The Ice Swimmer is a new detective. She's a woman. And the reason I wanted to have her, but she had a minor role in an earlier book, and she did some interesting things and surprising choices, so I wanted to know her better. And then I decided that she was gonna be the protagonist in The Ice Swimmer. So, and I had to do a lot of research to get to know her. I mean, talk with my daughters. the women in the same age, you know, and also police, female police investigators. And the thing is, she's going through some hard time in her life in this novel, because she's also inspired by my sister, who died in cancer. So Lena has a serious illness, but she, plot spoiler, she will survive. And that's one of the stories, but the other stories in the book is about Norway and how and why the happiness is there. I mean, because we're a big oil nation. And the welfare state, you know, is seems like a very well-functioning machinery. And the reason to this is that all the oil money is placed in something called Norwegian Petroleum Funds, which makes Norway to the biggest capitalist in the world, after the Emirates, maybe. And the question is, because this oil, this money is owned by the people, so what I find interesting is, how do we use that money? How do we earn that money? And then there comes ethical problems. I mean, shall the Norwegian Petroleum Funds invest money in child labor or gun factoring, things like that? Mm. And in this field, there is a interactive mass of powers. I mean, you have politics, you have lobbyists, you have police, and you have press. And I find it very interesting to dive into that and try to stage stories that show that this happiness maybe is on a very thin surface of something else.
Ragnar, your new series also features a female detective, Hulda. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about her and what we might have in store for us with her.
Yeah. So when we meet her, she's 64. She's about to retire from the police. And what actually happens in the first chapter of the book, more or less, is that she's called to a meeting with her boss, and he asks her to leave early because he needs her office for a young man. And she's not happy with that. So it's a bit of a shock to her. She was already like dreading retirement in general. But she gets one last case that she can, you know, spend her last few days looking at. And that's how we meet her. And then the series goes back in time. So for the next book, she's 50. So we meet her in the middle of her career. And the third book, she's 40. And then probably even younger, if there might be a fourth book, actually. So it's a long trilogy. And Hulda was before I created her, I had written a story series with a younger policeman who was like in his late 20s, early 30s. So it was like the different end of the spectrum, and it was an interesting challenge, and she sort of came to me in detail. I basically created her on the page, or down to the tiniest detail before I started writing. So these three or four books, they sort of tell her life story in a way, as well as her some of her biggest cases, and I actually, I know some women who are around that age, including my mother-in-law, and when I'm writing my books, she was always, she always used to ask me, is this me in this book, or is it? And it never was, until I created Hulda. And I stole a lot of things from my mother-in-law, and she has not, to this day, found out. She has not. She has not asked, and she, for some reason, this totally, escaped her, this fact. But I see this is being recorded, so who knows?
Yeah, maybe it won't make it all the way to Iceland then. So I actually want to follow up Ragnar on the next sort of as we. I shift to a different topic here. And so your work, Ragnar, has been compared with Agatha Christie, especially the first series, and especially the first books in the Dark Iceland series, Snowblind, in which a murder takes place in a small town in the far north of Iceland that has been cut off by a blizzard. So I'd like you to just tell us a little bit more about your relationship with Agatha Christie.
Yes. It's a platonic relationship. We never met, unfortunately. So I started reading Agatha Christie around the age of 11, 12, and I just fell in love with these books. I read everything I could read, and in Icelandic. And then when I ran out of books from the library, I actually went every Saturday morning with my father to the National Library of Iceland, where they used to have these older Icelandic books translations that were out of print. So I spent my mornings there reading Agatha Christie. And then when I, I'd read everything I could find in Icelandic, I just had to start reading English. And for some reason, when I was 17, I had nothing to do one summer, so I thought, maybe I could translate an Agatha Christie novel. So I had my mother drive me to the, because I was too young to drive, to the Icelandic publisher of Agatha Christie. And they actually sort of knew me, because I had been calling them every year, asking them when the next Christie would be published in Iceland and what the next Christie would be, etc. And so they knew this was just this strange guy who was just this strange interests. But they, amazingly, I told him, would you like me to translate a book for next Christmas for you? And he was very polite and sent me away. But amazingly, a few days later, he called me and said, if you want to do it, let's try. And he said I could pick any book I wanted, so I picked the shortest one I could find, because I had no idea how long it would take to translate a whole novel. So that was it. That was the start of my relationship with Christie. And I did 14 books all through college and law school, and when I started working as a lawyer. And I only gave up translating Christie when I started writing my own books, because I didn't have time to do both. But I'm pretty sure she has inspired me in some ways.
Agatha Christie was one of the first mystery writers that I ever read as a child as well. So I'd like to just throw this open to the rest of the panel and say, what are the authors who inspired you or who have paved the way for the types of books that you're writing now? Am I going to have to call on someone?
Well, I can say one thing about Agatha Christie. I mean, I love her work. It's very high concept. But, you know, today, you couldn't write like that. For instance, Murder on the Orient Express. I mean, come on. The idea, let's murder this guy on the train. We all will do it. We all have our own motive. And the world's best detective is on the train. That's a really crappy idea, actually. If you think about it. I mean, it's a great story, but... I don't believe it. So, no, she didn't inspire me that much. I like the high concept ideas, but I guess Henning Mankell was my big inspiration. It was the first, I read all his books, and it was long, thick books that, you know, they were unputdownable in a way. I was, you know, when I was young, I was quite a slow reader. The first book I read was Astrid Lindgren's The Brothers of Lionheart, or what is it called in English? Yeah. But then the first time I didn't have to really force myself through a book, that was Henning Mankell's books about Kurt Wallander. And it was just such a joy, and that inspired me to start writing at all, you know. And then... Of course, Stieg Larsson was also, I think he, for me, he took it to another level of, before that, everything was so serious, and he was kind of, I could feel that he had fun when he wrote it. It's like when Lisbeth Salander got all the money from this rich, bad guy, it wasn't a couple of millions, it was billions. You could see him, yeah, I add two more zeros, and it's more. He had fun, so... And he could do it, and, you know, you still believed it, and I loved that. So it was more kind of a cartoon, but in a good way. And so I thought that was really fresh, and then I decided, well, let's give it a try.
So, I actually think the first Stieg Larsson book was really influenced by Agatha Christie, so I think you've come full circle.
Okay, so then we close the circle.
Yeah.
So, Jonas, I know I've read some interviews with you where you said you didn't really consider yourself a crime writer, but you know you have written a crime novel. So.
Well, I definitely wrote a book about a crime.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So,
yes.
You know, but no, growing up, my dad didn't read any books at all. He read comic magazines, so I read comic magazines as well. And when I was like 14 or something, he sort of all of a sudden. He remembered that I existed and had a bad conscience.
He sent you a text?
And gave me a... He was not a bad father. He bought me a book. So he gave me a book about some guy... whose name was Hornblower, and he was sort of working on a ship, and I read like 10 pages and it was so boring. And then after 2 weeks he asked me what I thought about it, and I said, oh, I loved it. And he said, oh yeah. And it turns out there are like 42 books in the series, right? And I got all of them because he felt that, oh, finally we have something in common. My mother taught the history of the theater, so she her bedtime stories was always about, you know, Euripides and the Oedipus, and everybody sort of tore their eyes out, and I was so, yeah, it was sort of very bloody, and so I feel that I have the crime sort of, you know, idea in me, you know, growing up, yeah. The Phantom and Ice Gloss, basically, yeah.
Jenny, what did you read when you were growing up?
Well, I never picture myself being an author. Actually, as you said from the beginning, I've been doing so many other things in life. And I grew up in the north of Sweden, which is, it was really cold. I was born in Ethiopia, by the way, but I came to Sweden, when I was one, and I grew up in the north of Sweden, where it was really cold, and I had no idea that I wanted to write or anything about that. I wanted to be a figure skater. Or an ice princess, that's what I called it. But it was really too cold, so my parents put me inside in a ballet class where, you know, I didn't, it was too cold. I wanted to be a singer and a dancer. So it was actually quite late in life when I discovered writing, and it was all about that character that came to me while I was working as an investigator. And I hadn't really read a lot of crime fiction, not at all. So, but now after I started writing myself, then I start reading other, because then I got really curious how other authors wrote. But some people say that probably that's why I wrote something that was quite different from what was being published in at least in Sweden by that time. But I got inspiration from, I guess, mostly my work as an investigator, but also from a lot of things in society, what happens in society. And I usually also pick up things, phenomena that happens in the society, and use that as themes in my books. Yeah.
Yes, we in the Norwegians, we go a lot of skiing. So when I was a kid, I had to be with my parents on a little cottage in the mountains and go skiing, and I hated it. But the good thing with it was that my father, he loved pulp fiction. He had everything. I mean, he had all the very cheap novels to the high-level kind of novels. So I was there reading, not going skiing, and I fell in love with some of these books, you know. I mean, there was like John le Carré, and there was Mickey Spillane and everything. And I started to have some preferences, and I liked some of them. And went to the library, and I went home and got all the titles.
Yeah. Okay, so this next question is just for the whole panel, and I just want to... We've touched on some of these things already, and some of the answers that you've given to some of the other questions. But so Scandinavia and Iceland are often portrayed as safe and peaceful and prosperous and tolerant. That's why they're so happy. higher level of social equality than is found in many other countries. And yet the Nordic countries have, in varying degrees, all been affected by tensions created by immigration, the rise of nationalist sentiments, racism, global financial instability. So the question is what role, if any, does crime fiction play in raising awareness about society's problems, or should crime fiction just be merely escapism? Or can it do both?
I think the main goal is entertainment. If it's not entertaining, it's boring, right? But at the same time, it's a fact that the criminal acts, they are acts of free will, and the consequences is also always affecting other people, affecting law enforcement, affecting social society in a way, more or less. So I think what I like about crime fiction is that it's contemporary, and it's usually there is a touch of realism, and that's the society that's among us.
Yes, I totally agree. And for me, it's also the main thing is to entertain and try to write that unputdownable book. But then, when you do that, if you have a good story and you're able to write it down, you will also have loads of other small stuff, maybe political views, you know, and you will have a sense of which society is this, what is happening here, and I don't share all my characters' political views, but of course there will be, you know, some reality there that is interesting and is telling something about the world we live in. I think maybe you have to wait for 5-10 years. And if you look at the crime novels that are that old, then you can see a pattern. But when the books we write right now, is maybe it's too close, so it's hard to see. Then you see just a story and just a, you know, But if they have to lie, wait a bit in the shelf, and then you can see. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think it definitely it can be both. Like I said before, I use things that happens in society, and use that to and write that in my books. And I just released the fourth book in Sweden, and it's about suicide and mental health among youth people. So, and the last book was about organ trafficking and organ donations, which I think is very interesting. Topics to, and that's the thing about being an author in this genre, that it reaches a lot of people, and that helps my, if you want to say something about the society, or about, as I want to, about a female character, and question norms, which I think was the idea from the beginning, then I feel like it's a very effective way to reach people with the stories.
Yeah, I think, first and foremost, you want to tell a good story, but a good story isn't just the plot or the twist, which for me, I think you have to have as well. But the story is also about the characters, something that engages you and, you know, makes you want to read on, and with every character there is a backstory, there is something that you are addressing, you know, of a social nature, whether it's just on a very personal level or a bigger level. So I don't think you don't necessarily have to like try to address everything that's wrong with society, but in a way some of these elements will always find a way into good books, I think.
Okay, so also as I was doing my research for this panel, I came across an interesting quote that I wanted, another quote that I'd like to read here and get our panelists' take on it. But it's specifically addressed to Kjell. And of course, it's written by a Swedish crime fiction scholar named Kirsten Bergman. But she wrote, "Norwegian crime fiction has had a stronger tradition of hard-boiled private detectives compared to other Nordic countries, something that can probably be traced back to distrust of the police that had its roots in the Nazi occupation during the Second World War." So Kjell, you have addressed Norway's World War II history in your fiction, in the book The Man in the Window, and then also most recently in your standalone novel called The Courier, which has a direct link to Nazi-occupied Oslo. So do you agree that Norwegian crime fiction is more hard-boiled? And, you know, tell us a little bit more about how Norway's particular history has influenced your writing.
I think, in fact, that Swedish contemporary crime fiction is more hard-boiled. yeah. More or less, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I think that's true. There is maybe a historical fact that there's some mistrust in the police. And like in the World War II, it was like, the Norwegian Holocaust, for instance, was made by and executed by Norwegian police. The German occupants was not involved. They didn't know about it in the beginning. So that means that there is a historical mistrust, yes. And we have, the Cold War, being very close to the USA, and we have some bad stories about covering up things, etc. And even today, the most famous court case in Norway is against the policeman today. Mm. So I think it's a historical fact, yes. But I think there's a flow of crime fiction now in both all Nordic countries, and one part of the genre is very violent and crazy in my views, and I don't think it's more in Norway than in Sweden or Denmark or Iceland. I think we're equal there.
So tell us a little bit about The Courier, and because I read that one recently, and I thought it was just a really gripping story, and tell us about it a little bit.
It was the inspiration was many years ago. I was working with a man that he had lost his family in the Norwegian Holocaust, but he himself he escaped to Sweden, and from there he flew to Scotland and he educated as a saboteur. So he flew back to Norway and fought the enemy behind the enemy's lines. So he was a very charismatic man, and he. He wasn't a victim. I mean, he was a soldier and a Jew, and that fascinated me. So I always have been wanting to write a story about that kind of character, but I chose a woman. And the other inspiration for that was that in 1972 there was a terrorist attack in Norway. Five agents from Mossad, they went to Lillehammer city, and they shot a Palestinian called Ahmed Bouchiki. But he was not in the PLO. They did a mistake. And in Norway, and I'm in this lazy, sleepy country, the five Mossad agents, they have to drive back to Oslo to escape, and they are arrested. And one of these terrorists was named Sylvia Raphael. And she married her defender, her lawyer. And she became a journalist in Norway, in the biggest Norwegian paper, before they moved to South Africa. And, I mean, she was a very high, beautiful woman, and she had this background. So in this, my friend, Marcus, and in Sylvia, became a woman called Esther, that's the protagonist in The Courier, and she escapes. She is a courier. She is delivering illegal papers. She is almost arrested. She escapes to Sweden, and her family is arrested in Norway. And when she is in Sweden, she is working with the Norwegian resistance there. And the plot is that before she leaves, almost at the same time, her best friend also is killed. And her husband, Åse's husband, is also forced to flee to Sweden. And they meet, Esther and Gerhard meet there, and he dies in a fire. And 25 years later, he appears again in Oslo in 1967. And then Esther is very curious, you know, why? What has happened to him? Didn't he die? And if he didn't die, who died? And why has he come back? And what has he been doing for these 25 years? So that's the story. And
and you have to read the book to find out the answer. So, so Ragnar, you mentioned earlier about how safe it is in Iceland, and very few murders take place. And I know that, you know, I think last year there was one. But you have written about some of the darker aspects of Iceland, like drug trade and domestic violence. And you've also shown that these things don't exist just in big cities, but they can also be found in tiny communities in the far north of Iceland. So why did you pick this small town in the north of Iceland as a setting for your earlier books? And what are some of the challenges that you find writing Icelandic crime fiction?
Yeah, so the town, it's called Siglufjörður, and it's the northernmost town in Iceland. And the reason was basically because this is where my father grew up and where my grandparents lived. So it was a town I'd been going to every year for all my life and still do. So it was sort of the obvious choice when I needed a setting for a crime novel, because it's surrounded by these mountains. So, you know, 50 years ago or so, you couldn't even go there except by boat or by crossing a mountain, which was usually closed in winter. So, but they had one tunnel then in the 60s into town. So I thought, you know, it can be sort of an Agatha Christie-esque setting because you can close the town off. And it's also just it's a beautiful place, very scenic, but also quite dramatic because of it's far north, so in the winter it's very cold and a lot of snow. It gets probably one of the places in Iceland where you can get the most snow. But then in summer it's very warm on an Icelandic scale. And it has this 24-hour daylight in June. But in like from November to January, there is no sunshine in Siglufjörður at all because of the mountains and the location. So for me, I think that was the reason. And also, my grandfather had been writing about Siglufjörður, about the history of the place. He was writing all his life. He was also working for the city of Siglufjörður. But when he was 80, he started publishing his books. So between the age of 80 and 90, he published like 5 books about Siglufjörður. So in some way, I'm continuing his tradition in a very different way. But so that was sort of the reason. And it's but there are challenges with a small town like this. So I think only 2 out of the 5 books that are set in Siglufjörður have like a murder taking place exactly there. So the other 3, we go around the north, use more locations, all real places. And because I want this to be believable, and I watched too much Jessica Fletcher growing up to make me wary of this.
The Cabot's Cove of Iceland.
Yeah.
So, Jonas, I mentioned in my introduction that your novel, The Helicopter Heist, has been optioned for a film, and even has Jake Gyllenhaal attached to it. Can you give us any updates? What's going on there? And then I'd like to ask the rest of the panel what their film or TV options are about any of their books.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first time... First time I went to Hollywood to try to sell a script, I was amazed. I had a script under my arm. I went into an agent's office, and they loved me. And they were like, "Finally, you're here!" And I'm looking around and thinking, "It can't be me," but it was me. And they loved my script, and everything was wonderful. And they said, "You know, please call. We're going to call you back on Monday, and this is great." And my wife called afterwards and said, "How did the meeting go?" And I said, "You won't believe this, but they loved me and they loved the script." And the next Monday, nobody called. And maybe it was the wrong Monday, and it was an additional Monday. Nobody called. 3 Mondays afterwards, I started to call them. I got to the assistant. I never called. 6 months later, I finally get the guy again, right? And I'm like, I'm not sure you remember me. I'm Jonas. I went there with the script. Of course I remember you. I love the script. It's great. I'm going to call you on Monday. So so when you ask about how is Jake Gyllenhaal in the movies going, I'll tell you, it's going great.
you'll tell us on Monday.
Yes.
Okay. Well.
And then I learned also, next year, and that can be said every year from now on until eternity, actually. So, yeah, next year, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think that's
another world is development hell.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but everybody is attached and everybody is happy, and who knows?
We'll know on Monday.
We'll know on Monday.
Any other film or TV things going on?
Yeah, the Leona, the first book is sold to Hollywood as well, and... Yeah, I haven't heard about Monday, but I guess it must be something like that because I don't really know much and I'm not allowed even to say anything, but I'm really glad. And I mean, to me, just to think about seeing Leona on the big screen, it would be really cool. But this actor that's going to play Leona, she's going to have a really quite big challenge. It's going to be interesting.
Well, my series about Fabian, it's being optioned and with the biggest company in Scandinavia, Nordisk Film. But Yes, it's development hell, I would say. I mean, you have screenwriters working on it. At first they asked me if I could write it, but I don't have the time. I'm writing novels now. So then you have took almost 1.5 years just to find the right screenwriters. Because, I mean, there's loads of screenwriters, but you need a good name. So then they need to have, oh, this will be right project. You know, all the good screenwriters are busy, so you have to wait. You know, it's complicated. Yeah. But now I have two really good screenwriters working on it, one Danish woman and one Swedish guy. And I hope it's getting good. I don't know. Okay. But that's how it is.
I actually read the script for the first book, the film script, and it was really interesting to read because, I mean, I wrote the book and then read a script that someone else wrote and used the characters. I was like, when I got the script in my hand, I was like, I don't know. I read with one eye open and one eye closed. Like, you know, we never know what they did with the book. But yeah, I'm quite pleased so far. So yeah, I hope.
I have a couple of I Call You Monday experiences.
Yeah.
But I think the best thing to realize movies writing the script, independent script. I mean, not based on a book. That's easier to realize.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've sold Hulda actually the new series to just like 2 months ago. So it's pretty early to Hollywood to a guy called Greg Silverman. Used to be the president of Warner Brothers, and he's most famous now, I think, for greenlighting A Star Is Born, just before he quit. But he set up his own company, and this was, I think, one of his first international acquisitions. So I hope we'll see Hulda. I think the plan is to do a TV series. So who knows? That's very exciting.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've got just one more question, and then we'll be opening it up for audience questions. So my last question, which is for the whole panel, and it's really sort of a two-part question. So it's, what are you working on now? And due to the delay in the translation and publication process here in the States, what can we expect to see next from you here? So, Jonas.
Okay, so I've written another true crime story, my second crime. So now I'm a crime novelist.
You are officially a crime writer now.
About a crime in Sweden in 2003, a small place in Sweden where we had a congregation, a Christian congregation with that sort of slowly turned into sort of a sect. And I'm also actually working on the TV series at the same time for that novel, and it's going to be published in Sweden this fall, and I guess and hope in the US in 2020 or 21. Yeah.
Well, I working on writing now on the fifth part in the Fabian Risk series. Here, I think it's three. That's out. Three. And I don't know if the two others are sold to the U.S. yet. Maybe they're working on it. I hope so.
Hopefully.
In Sweden, the new one will come in after the summer.
Yes, and I'm also working at the fifth book in the Leona series. And here in U.S., it's only two books out. Actually, from the beginning, I wanted to write the three books. That was what I decided to do from the beginning. And a trilogy, that sounded great, I think. But when I started writing the second book, I got a lot of new ideas. So I was, you know, I was just thinking, am I going to try to squeeze all those ideas into three books, or should I continue the series? And my publishing house said, oh, you should definitely continue. So that's what I've done, and now I'm writing the fifth book. But I feel that this is going to be the last one, but I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say anything now because...
you might get more ideas.
But yeah, exactly. But I have so many other ideas for other books also, so I want to try to write something else as well.
I have just completed a novel with the same protagonist that is in The Ice Swimmer. And now I'm working on a TV series about ISIS widows and the children there. Sounds like a non-fiction, but it's a drama about kidnapping story.
Yeah, so I've just finished the fourth book about Hulda for publication in Iceland this year, and I'm sort of thinking whether I should do one more in the other series, so that might be the next, my next project. Here in the US, we have a book coming out in May, later in May, called The Island, and that's book number two about Hulda. And as always, there's a little bit of delay, so I was working on that a few years ago. And actually, when I was working on that, because it's set on an island south of Iceland, a small island with just one house and a lot of puffins. And this house, I was at a panel just like this in the UK probably 3 years ago when I was writing the story. And then I was telling the audience about this story, and I told them set on an island where they have these hunting lots and where the people, you know, the men go there and they kill puffins. And there was a gasp from the audience that people would actually kill puffins in Iceland. So after that reaction, I deleted all references to puffin killing from the book. I will never write about it. So when you, if you read that book, you can sort of read between the lines that they kill puffins, but it you won't see it in the book.
You learned it here, folks. Okay, well, now I'd like to open this up to audience questions. Now, this panel is being filmed and recorded, so if you, and we have a microphone for your questions, and it is over on the, to your left, side of the room. So if you would have a question, could you please go around the back and line up along the side of the room and ask your questions in the mic, please.
Hi, I've become hooked on Scandinavian mysteries on TV, and I wonder, so many have a kind of bizarre, violent element in it, and we tend to think here of Scandinavians as mild-mannered, formal, gentle, maybe drinking, but where does that violent, bizarre kind of criminality come from?
Well, I think that's one of the, I mean, when I'm talking about the books in Swedish or Scandinavian crime in different countries, this is the question we always get. Like, how come in Sweden, isn't that a quite safe country? Is there a lot of serial killers walking around on the streets? Or
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I think, I mean, Sweden, we had a long tradition from crime fiction. And sometimes when you're in a safe place, you need to just dream away to something else. And but the question about violence, I think for me, I try to avoid as much violence in my books. I mean, of course, we write in crime fiction, so sometimes it's needed to for the story. But to me, I try not to describe it too close, or maybe it's because I've been working with it, so I don't really find it entertaining. So I try to, and for me also the threat about violence is more interesting to me than the actual violence. So, but I know some authors have different opinions about that. Oh, you're all with me? Great.
Yeah, no, I still haven't murdered anyone in my books. I'm sort of, I tried a couple of times, failed miserably. So I will keep on it. But I think it's exactly what you say. The interesting thing about just placing a very violent sort of man or episode in a very calm and you know, scenic surrounding, that tension is interesting. That creates drama in itself. So I think that Sweden and Norway and Finland and Denmark and Iceland lends itself extremely well to that, to the crime scenes, actually.
I think, as you said, that no, I mean, basically, Scandinavia is quite a safe place to be. And, I mean, if you're reading a crime novel, you're at home, the door is locked, you know, the kids sleep, everything is fine, you feel quite safe. And my goal is to get you scared. So then, you have to do some stuff there, you know, in order to get the reader to be really scared. And then, of course, sometimes it can be too exaggerated. You know, I mean, in all my books, I have serial killers. We didn't have one serial killer in Sweden yet, for real. We had one fake serial killer. But, you know, so...
But, that's so sad.
I mean,
we had one, but it turned out not to be.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I agree with Jenny. In my novels, we are rarely there when the crime happens. We are often there before, you know, in the planning with the killer, or afterwards with the investigator. But of course, then you understand what has happened here, and that's quite, you know, it can be awful.
I also think there's a, you know, an element of just crime writers being bored, because I have a friend who writes crime novels in Iceland, and she's done like 10 or 15 books. And then, you know, towards the her latest book, she tried killing people in these very horrible manners, just because, you know, she was tired of the old ways of killing. And that, she says so herself. So I think, you know, maybe what you're seeing on TV is just, you know, people who with very strange imagination.
Hi, this is for anybody to comment on. I was wondering if you all would consider, like, the Shetland Mysteries Nordic Noir, and if so, if Scotland left the UK, do you think they would join the happiest country list?
I think, you know, crime fiction is about crime committed in a place. So I think Anne Cleves is like Nordic Noir, yes, in a way, yeah, even if it's England.
Absolutely. I think Anne would be very upset if we would not say that she belongs with us.
They certainly have the sweaters for it.
Are you still reading My Shuval and Per Wallu? Do you have any comments on that?
It's my inspiration, yes.
I have read it, but I don't read it now anymore. No.
It's read. I mean, they continue to publish them all the time, so they're sort of a part of our literary legacy in Sweden.
So I want to apologize because my question is about a television series, not a novel, and I think the writer isn't here with us today. So based on that, have any of you seen the series Occupied? And if so, I loved the plot of Norwegians' oil supply in contrast to climate change. And so if any of, I'm sorry, again, it's a television series and the author isn't here, but if any of you have thoughts on that plot, I found it fascinating because Norway has a special voice in my mind as an oil producing country.
I'm the Norwegian here. I have, you know, I like the oil angle in Occupied, but I don't like the occupation angle because I think it's artificial and strange about Russians ruling everything. And yes, yeah.
Do we have more questions? Yeah. Okay. Just hold on a second. They're going to bring you the mic.
Most murders, especially those we see in the United States, are really very obvious murders. They're boring, if anything else. People have get in a quarrel, they drink, they take drugs, and the issues are really unimportant. But they have at hand a means of killing someone, a gun, a knife, whatever. I think it's very hard because most of the writers, like yourself, make crime interesting, elegant, rather than the realism of what murder actually occurs.
Yeah, I mean, as a writer, I'm not that interested in exactly what happens in the real world. I want to have a, you know, I want to look at the real world and try to say something about that, but exaggerated in one sense. And for me, I'm not that interested in having those, because you're right, that's the normal way. But I don't see a story there. And in my series that I've been working on, there, the villains, the killers, they have a plan and a motive. And, you know, then I see a story and I can say something about the world we're living in. And of course, everything is not for real. It's fiction.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't write particularly about murders because I think there are so many other crimes that it is interesting to write about. So, but of course, I had a few characters that I got really tired of, and I thought that maybe I should kill him. I can't do that, right? I mean, I built my own world. So, but other than that, I've been writing about other kind of crimes. Yeah.
And also an element of tradition here, like you know, crime fiction is so many things. I mean, you have McCall Smith writing about purse being stolen, and it's okay because it's a fantastic characters there, and. Crime fiction is also a game, so the game takes over sometimes, and it's a part of tradition. So there's an element of realism, but there are also big, big elements of fantasy and escapism in these stories.
Mm. Yeah, hi. Thanks, everybody. A question for Ragnar and a question for Jenny. Ragnar, when you were introduced this morning, it sounded like you still had a day job as a lawyer. Is that right? Can you tell us why you're doing that? And then Jenny, can you tell me how you moved from pop star to police detective?
Yeah, I still work work in a bank in Iceland. You know, it's fun. You meet a lot of people. I think being only a writer can probably be a little bit lonely. But so, yeah, I enjoy it. So I think I'll do it as long as I you know, want to.
Yeah, why did I go from pop star to investigator? I think like I said before, I grew up in this small city in the north of Sweden, and I moved to Stockholm when I was quite in my 20s, quite young. And I was singing and dancing by that time, but after a while, I started to see the society around me. And when you move from a really small place to a big city, you see people that, I mean, I saw homeless people on the streets. I saw criminality. I saw people that were addicted to drugs and those kind of things. And I started to think also, I mean, I'm adopted. So when you're adopted, then you think a lot about what makes you the person that you are? Is it your genes, or is it society that you grow up in? And since I was born in one of the most poorest countries in the world and grew up in one of the richest countries in the world, but still I saw people on the streets that didn't have a home. So I started thinking about that and wanted to know more. How come? So that's when I started to study at the university, and I all these subjects that psychology and sociology and those kind of things. And I ended up studying criminology. And after that, the step wasn't too big to start working as an investigator for the police force. So that's why.
Okay, we have one last question.
Yeah, I was told that you have a very short time to answer this, and I don't know if this is a short answer question, but I'm a real fan of Mankell, almost a religious follower of his. In his novels, setting and locale are very important. They're almost like, to me at least, almost like another character. I wonder for any or all of you, how important is setting and locale?
Yeah, what was the question? How important where it takes place?
Where it takes place and the nature of the places where the action takes place.
Yeah, for me, it's really important. When I started to write, I thought about which place in Sweden shall I make to my place? And I chose Helsingborg, where I was born and raised. And it's in south of Sweden where Denmark and Sweden almost gets together, because crime travels over borders, and I thought it was exciting just to, you know, have that, so that it's easier for the crime to go over, but it's really hard for the police forces to work together, because I have a Danish crime detective and a Swedish one, and it's hard for them to cooperate. And then, you know, I was there. It's a town where 150,000 in population, so you can both be anonymous, you can be a random man, and you can both see your neighbor in the city. I liked the how big and small it was at the same time. And then you have Öresund, that you have the water, and islands around. So it was, for me, it was a perfect place, actually. And it's just, you have the city, and then you can go with a bicycle for like 20 minutes, and it's countryside. So for me, it was perfect.
Yeah, for the Helicopter Heist, my book, Stockholm is definitely one of the main characters, for sure.
Yes, I started to write about the Oslo detectives many years ago, and the city is always changing, and I find that very intriguing and inspiring when I write. Like the ice swimmer is some part of it is going on in a construction site, which is now a very posh area in the city. So I try to explore the city for every book, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's, for me, it's very important as well. I mean, just living in Iceland and trying to create crime novels set in Iceland, for me, I feel I need to make the country a character and these different places. And so if you haven't, if you can't visit Iceland, if you read the books, you should be able to feel like you're there for a little while.
Okay. That's all we have time for. Thank you very much for coming.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast from the Bay Area Book Festival. For more information and podcasts, please go to www.baybookfest.org.